and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we're opening cans live on the air and simplifying the good life
at the same time. Not actually live. Who are you, anyway?
My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores.
That's who you are.
Broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
I don't know what just happened.
It was fun, though. My mouth
just quit working.
That happens.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, we are the best times to ride your bicycle. Or what are?
Like I said,
my mouth quit working.
Okay, you could say we're right in the middle of the bicycle times.
We are right in the middle of the times to bicycle.
Right. Adam Newman, hello.
Hello.
How do you do?
I do well, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for coming in. Adam is with Bicycle Times, the magazine, and we have two crisp copies, leaning. Mine is on top of a milk crate.
Mine's under my burrito.
There we go. It's multifunctional.
I'm keeping the magazine warm.
And we are all here together.
I don't know. Most of you don't know this, but I will only read magazines if they're like above a certain temperature. You know.
Yeah, you got to warm it up a little.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
A tortilla.
Exactly. You know.
Yeah. If it's not hot off the presses,
then you gotta re-warm it.
Pretend that it's hot off the presses. Or like a tortilla,
it's
you can warm it up.
Just the same.
Exactly.
It's just like it was recently made. Yeah. So we are here. It is sort of kind of a rainy day.
Sort of, kind of.
Yeah.
It was like an on and off rainy day.
Right.
You got wet.
Yes. Yeah, I started my day by showing up to work, and there was a marina on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see this?
I smelled it.
Yeah, it smelled like
it
1,000 boats melting.
Yep.
Which is just like fiberglass in the air.
I'm going to do some very minor research here.
Yeah. It was basically, as far as I can tell, they don't know. It is...
no one knows what happened.
No one knows why
it
started.
Massive fire destroys marina building that stores around 350 boats.
So sadly, it's still boat month.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just want to know if the Portland Fire Bureau got to use those really cool fire boats.
The ones that just like suck water up out of the river?
Big red ones, yeah.
Yeah, I think they had one.
There's a picture of a truck. So
like they started with trucks, and that wasn't enough water, and so they started like shooting water out of the river with those fire boats.
Just dying to use those things.
Yeah, not too many opportunities.
Exactly.
Yeah, but they do have one, which I wouldn't have thought of. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, they're probably both sad, there or were anyways. So yeah, it was like you could still see the flames in the morning before the sun came up, and then like there was a large black pillar of smoke all day.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I was pulling in, 4:30, I was pulling into the garage, and yeah, you could still see the smoke. You could still smell it. It still smelled like plastic and rubber.
Yeah, I think Sebastian from down in California said this is some man in Lake Oswego has an N-1 for his boat collection. So,
yeah.
Yikes.
Wow, yeah, look at that.
It's a lot of fire. Sorry it had to happen, but as far as we can tell, nobody was hurt, nobody died, so that's all good news.
I don't know, I didn't read the article.
Yeah.
But yes, as far as we can tell.
I got curious early and looked it up on the internet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was that whole thing where you expect the internet to tell you, and the internet does not yet know, and then in a couple hours, there was more information. So, but apparently it started like really late the other night, so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was late, 10:30 something.
Yeah, yeah, and so it burned overnight, and it was still, like, going strong in the morning when I showed up for work.
So it was burning, and the fire crew had been working on it all night?
I think so, yeah.
It was a 4-alarm, I saw.
That is insane.
Yeah, because it started as a 3-alarm, I think, and then they called in more people. And I don't really know the difference between those, although I'm sure someone knows.
Johnny K!
Someone out there, yeah, exactly. It's been a while since we've asked Johnny K to help us out because we don't know something.
I haven't heard from you in a while, Johnny.
It's okay. I'm sure he's doing all right. Yeah. I just assume Johnny K is okay unless I hear otherwise.
Right.
He seems to be one of those even keel kind of guys.
It's kind of no news is good news.
Right, right. Yeah. And all news is good news.
All news is good.
Or something. I don't know. Maybe not. But
when it comes from Johnny K, pretty much.
Hey, did I tell you? I decided not to buy a truck.
you decided not to.
Right, because I was going back and forth over it, just thinking, like, it'd be super nice to have something like that,
it was
utilitarian.
Like maybe 2 weeks ago where, like, you pulled into the driveway with the truck and was like, this is it. This is the one.
Yeah, test drive from a dealership in a seedy part of town. And I think that was the beginning of the end. I think I had to get close enough to the buying process to say, you know, I don't think I can afford. I mean, like, we could afford it probably, but I don't know if I want to spend my money on a truck.
You don't know if you want to afford it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I realized that a big piece of it is, well, because Adele was saying, hey, wouldn't it be fun if we had a truck so we could, like, go places on the weekends? And I was thinking, that would be fun. And I started, like, doing all the research, and I had, like, the perfect truck in mind. And then I realized that it takes a lot of upkeep, a lot of maintenance. Tim, we didn't talk about it yesterday when Tim was in, but Tim Mooney.
Oh,
from the Pedal Shift Project.
Well, he bounced a mail almost immediately when you mentioned it. He bounced a mail over to us about, like, don't do it.
Well, and he said that, yeah, basically it's like when you factor in upkeep and everything, like, it's cheaper to rent.
Yeah.
And that's true. And I was thinking about, like, the possibility of using it as, like, you know, renting it out to people and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I also realized, like, I don't know if I have, the commitment to keep a truck running the way it should be. And I'm not sure if it would be economical, like. And the last thing I think that I thought about was that I still like the versatility. If I go to rent something, I can have anything I want. So if I want to take a Prius out, I can get one. If I want to take a tiny compact, I can get one. If I want to rent like an F-250, I could get one.
You could do that.
Yeah. So I like the versatility of that. It's just that, like, it makes it a little more complicated to go out somewhere on the weekend if you have to rent something. But in the long run, it's less convenient because I don't want to lean on something for convenience. I'd rather ride my bike places, and so that's a thing. And yeah,
yes.
So I think I decided not to, at least for now.
Speaking of leaning on things for convenience,
yes,
I'm still driving a Prius.
Right? How's that going?
A little piece of me dies a little bit more.
Isn't it fun though?
Well,
they're silent. Sometimes.
They're not as quiet as I thought it was going to be. Maybe I'm doing it wrong, though. I'm not exactly, you know, one of those that just eases onto the accelerator.
Oh, right. It takes a deft touch to, like, or you can switch it into, what, eco mode? Where it just runs on.
I'm afraid of doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we might break it.
I'll
it might never
like
go back.
2 miles down the road, the battery be like, I'm done.
Right, right. And I wonder sometimes about that.
Yeah.
So.
I just filled it up with gas today.
How much did it take?
I don't even know, honestly.
You spent $3
for like 2 minutes.
Went 50 miles?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The tanks are small on those things. That's the crazy part. Because I remember when I was a kid, I had a Dodge Dart, and it had an enormous gas tank. And
really?
If I filled up, at that time, it was like $19 filled the tank. And it was like, you know, 98 cents a gallon or
like
something.
So probably like a 15-gallon tank.
Yeah, who knows. But the trick was that, like, filling up a Prius, it takes less fuel in the tank because it, you know, it's more economical. And
right.
So, yeah, like $6, tank's full. And that's like with gas at $5
right.
a gallon or something. So, yeah.
But I realized, like, that's just a chore, man.
Right, right, right. That's the thing, man. Yeah, because, like,
it's such a small thing as far as car ownership goes.
It is. But, and less of a chore in Oregon because someone pumps your gas for you.
Well, yeah.
But then you have to
exactly.
tip them.
Yeah. Yeah, and man, that guy.
I've only tipped once. And
oh, for real?
Because he deserved it. But he seemed genuinely shocked.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
I've
the guy,
been
the guy
very
I
confused. And people
like,
ask me if I'm like, it's a very.
Yeah.
No one's ever given me a clear answer on that one.
I don't think you actually have to tip them. And that was one of the things that.
I don't think it's part of their wages either. Like, say, like
right.
a wait staff,
it's
you know, they're
yeah,
paid
yeah.
like less than minimum wage because.
But not in Oregon or Washington.
Oh, for real?
Or California. No,
oh,
West great. Coast is a great place to be a waiter.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Kansas
yeah,
is a lame
like,
place
like,
to be a waiter.
Gratuity is generally factored into your wages.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think it's the same with gas.
No, I don't think
helpers.
So. No, they get paid probably minimum wage to do what they do.
Sure.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't know that, but I would guess. It's not, it doesn't take the most education to pump gas because most people do it for free in other states. But it is a thing you have to factor in because, like, with your bike, you just roll it out of the garage and then you go somewhere. And
oh, yeah.
Unless you're mountain biking, then you have to go
then
farther.
You do need to fill up.
Somehow.
You have to get someone to pump your gas.
Right, right. Unless you happen to live close to awesome mountain biking access.
I don't know anyone that does that.
It's not, yeah.
It's
not possible in Portland.
Here.
Yeah. So, yeah. But there is the whole convenience thing. Like it kind of cuts both ways because especially if I'm renting a car, like the whole Filling up the tank afterwards is the trick. Like you have to make sure that you make that fuel stop at some
point. Just prepay.
I've done that.
Your life is too important to spend valuable time getting gas at the last second.
Looking at
the
Google Maps,
possible gas station.
Did you know that Google Maps now shows you the price of gas stations?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been a long time since I needed to use it, but it's a thing now. Yeah, fascinating.
They also route you near a Taco Bell.
Most likely so. Yeah, which you don't need because you've been sitting instead of working.
Right.
Sadly.
Is there a Dairy Queen setting?
There might be.
I'm firmly convinced. I mean, there's got to be no difference.
It was like a controversy. It was like a real controversy one time. It was very short-lived that, like, people claimed Google routed you unnecessarily, like, near, like, businesses.
I could see Starbucks doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I pick Starbucks on Taco Bell because it's like the place that you would least likely want to go.
Well, and Starbucks and Google are tied together for their Wi-Fi now.
Oh, yeah, like that's
every
right.
Starbucks is sponsored by Google for Wi-Fi.
Google, yeah, and AT&T.
So, yeah, the Wi-Fi network is called Google Starbucks,
that's
which
right.
sounds
the
like...
conspiracies are true.
Yeah, all exactly. They're watching us as we drink coffee. They're watching us through our straws.
This latte was an inside job.
Yeah. No, but I was gonna say that I think there's probably likely no difference in the quality of the food from like Dairy Queen to Burger King or whatever. But I feel like Dairy Queen consistently has the best flavored cheap fake burgers.
Yes. Growing up, we ate Dairy Queen and they had the Brazier concept. And I never really understood the Brazier is the hot food portion of Dairy Queen, I believe.
Yeah.
Totally.
And
some
merger
back in the
50s
or something.
They had the most fantastic French fries. Mm. Though I haven't tried them lately, so
yeah.
I don't know.
It's about time for an educational trip.
I suppose so.
A research.
There's a Dairy Queen.
Research study.
If I get the house that I looked at today and really want, there would be a Dairy Queen right on the way to your house.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, yeah. And you are, you're looking at a house and you probably have a place to live.
Yeah.
Which is different
Finally,
than yesterday.
Finally, a house that doesn't suck. Or like
congratulations.
Just roommates who neglected to tell me, you know, whether or not I've been part of the house. Yeah. No, they seem really cool, real laid back.
Excellent.
It's an interesting situation. Like the parents own the house and like the kid grew up in the house. And is now going to college.
Oh, wait. So you're going to be like the surrogate child then or something?
No, because then the parents moved out. They got another house and they moved out. And so then they filled this house with rentals.
I see.
And have been doing this for years.
So it's kind of like a college dorm sort of situation? Like all these kids are
a little less now, but I think that's what it started out
okay.
as.
Now it's a hipster dorm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. I mean, that's been a long search.
Yeah.
So you got to feel good about having an option that is going to work out.
Yes.
And it's surprisingly hard, like you were saying already. It's like, I want to give you my money. Why don't you want to take it?
Right. Well, and okay, I understand, like, especially for people who are living in the house that they're, like, renting a room in. Like, say, you know, I just bought a house and I'm going to, like, rent a room or whatever. I can understand, like, maybe having some, like, ground rules, maybe being a little bit picky about who you're going to rent to.
Like must wear blue shirts.
Right. Well, maybe not that picky.
Or any shirt.
But... or a shirt.
Yes.
That's it. I'm done.
Exactly. I can't stand this totalitarian regime.
Yes.
What do they expect me to do?
But there was just some weird things. And then, like, I would meet with housemates or prospective housemates and then realize like none of these people own the house.
Right.
Like, why do you guys care? Why do you care so much? I'm going to make your rent cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. You should be able to put it. And you're a fairly low impact housemate. Like I've lived with you.
Thank you.
Well,
I
what?
Try to say that.
You
I
lived
try
in,
to promote myself
yeah.
as that.
When I had an RV, when you first moved to town, you lived in that.
I lived in an RV.
And you were just kind of around the house, but you were very low impact.
Yeah.
You're just like sitting in front of the fireplace, like burning fires.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Which is fun.
So now that I've kind of decided on a house, I can kind of air a little bit of dirty laundry here on some of these other houses that I've looked at.
Okay.
One particular interview, I'm going to call it an interview because that's basically what it was.
What's this person's name?
I'm not going to do that. I will say it's pretty close to where Anna lives and where Ride Your Bike is.
Okay.
So that
Southeast
you,
Portland?
Yeah, yeah, like in the FOPO area.
Mm.
I think they still have an ad up. That's why I'm not going to like name
oh,
it.
Oh, okay.
But
if they
anyway,
took it down, if they found another housemate, you'd be like, it's on, war.
Fuck you. but like we sat down and I talked with – there were three other roommates and I talked with two of the three and they're like, yeah, we'll talk with the other one. And a week later and they still never got around, oh, yeah, we need to – we need to do that. We'll talk with this other roommate.
They're not motivated to like.
Right, right, exactly.
It's like the condo board.
And, yeah.
The neighborhood association.
Right.
Gotta check out his haircut. Make sure it's not too long.
But the weirdest thing was during the interview, one of the guys there was like, "I'm afraid you're not really that social."
He's afraid of that?
Yeah.
And what's he basing this on?
I was explaining kind of like what my typical day was.
Like you didn't bring any of your friends to the interview?
I don't know. It's like, well,
you seem like kind of a loner, man.
And I'm specifically only responding to ads that are like, we want, you know, we're kind of a quiet house. We want a low-key roommate.
That's the best possible roommate.
Right.
Right.
And he's like, hey,
somebody
you're
goes in
quiet.
The room
what's
and
up?
Never talks and you never see them.
Or perhaps someone, for example, who says he's going to live at your house and then ends up like cat-sitting for 2 or 3 weeks. I don't know who that would be, but just you know, offhand, it's something that comes to mind.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, Aaron, as a housemate this most recent time around, you lived here and paid rent for a house that you spent like less than a quarter of your rent paid in.
I don't care, man. It's worth the money to like have
to have an address.
Have an address yeah. to or even just
you also
just
don't
to
receive
know
mail
that there's
there.
A bed somewhere that I can use.
That's true. Yeah. Right. So, anyways, so you've banked up some credit at our house.
That's good cuz I might be spending it soon.
Right, right. So, anyways, well, congratulations. I'm glad that you are I'm glad you're
yeah,
on your
this
way
is cool.
to
it's in a great area. It's yeah. Like just east of the like the main Hollywood
so very hub. Close to Velo Cult.
Very close.
It means you're
going to
be there all the time.
Oh, that's
yeah,
dangerous.
Pour over coffees.
Yeah.
From 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it cuts my work commute like almost in half.
Right. So. And it's become a much larger commute cuz yes. As you've said, your commute used to be down the stairs.
Just going down the stairs.
Yeah, and that's like the adjustment, I'm sure. I want to check in with you like later on after it's been some time.
Yeah.
Because getting used to like commuting after not commuting has got to be weird.
It's, yeah, yeah. It's, there's an adjustment,
yeah.
I guess, is the best way I can. I have some mixed feelings about the commute in and of itself or about not necessarily about commuting, but about like getting used to it and
about like state highways and things.
Well, and what it's done for my own personal time management and realizing like, oh, hey, there's this chunk of time now that I kind of did nothing with that. Like now I've got to factor in.
Right. Right. Or like if you don't get with the act and be like, well, I got to leave time to go to work or time to leave work. It's like, well. I just lost like half of my evening
right.
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll talk more about that later. Like,
all right. I'm going to check in with you in a month and be like, hey, how's commuting?
Okay.
All right. Cool. Well, you know, right now we have a very short commute to a place where you can get a tasty beverage.
This is maybe like a 2-minute walk.
Yes. Southeast Division and 12th, as a matter of fact, the Beer Mongers. Great place to get a beer. Adam, you were there before you came over here.
Guilty as charged.
What can you say about their atmosphere?
It's a lovely atmosphere. You're surrounded by walls of beer.
I'm glad you said that.
Good people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. One thing that I was going to mention is that if you are, in fact, a sports fan, I don't follow sports all that often, but I do know that there's a team in town called the Timbers, and they kick a ball with their feet, and it's not called football.
No.
So,
well, it's called football everywhere else.
Right, right, right. But they have no pity, and they will be here until they die.
No pity in
so,
the city.
Yeah, yeah. The Portland Timbers. Professional MLS soccer. Every game is showed at the Beer Mongers.
I was at Beer Mongers when the Timbers won the championship.
Oh, you were there?
Oh, you were there?
And it was
we were there together then.
Yeah, it was a very exciting atmosphere.
It was incredible.
Yes, it, yes. Was.
It was nearly for someone who's not accustomed to the sports melee, I was nervous. But I think that's a good reason to go. I think people should do things that scare themselves so that they kind of like challenge their boundaries and everything. And
well, and everyone was very happy.
Yes, they were super happy.
I was going to yell helter skelter and just see what happens after that.
So, yeah, it was a good time. And it's a good place to go, good place to hang out. The other thing, of course, Blazers, basketballs, and March Madness, basketballs of all varieties from every town.
You know, I forgot that Blazers was short for Trailblazers.
Right.
Which makes sense here in Oregon.
They didn't name it after the truck?
Right.
The Chevy truck?
Or the
jacket?
You know, the
or
jacket.
The, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like,
yeah.
We're not really a college town.
Yeah. They used to be called the Jailblazers back in the day because like so many of them were in trouble with the law.
Well, that was more colloquial.
Right. Well, they didn't change the name to the Jailblazers, which would be hilarious if they did. Yeah, so the franchise has existed since that momentous day in 1977 when they won.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they've won since then, but anyways.
But 77 was the moment.
You like balls, you can go watch them on the television at the Beer Mongers. It's a good time. So go over there, Southeast Division of 12.
Yeah.
Sean, was that okay?
I hope so.
Okay, good. Adam Newman, welcome to the podcasting studio.
Oh, hi, guys. Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, hey.
Where'd you come from?
Got a pipe in his mouth. Excuse me. The patches on the blazer. Yeah. So you are with Bicycle Times.
I'm the editor of Bicycle Times.
Yeah. How long have you been with Bicycle Times?
So I have worked at our parent company. We have two magazines, Bicycle Times and Dirt Rag.
Dirt Rag,
yeah. Bike magazine. I've been there for about 5-ish years. I was the online editor for quite a while, covering both magazines. Last summer, I took over as editor of Bicycle Times.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Your dynasty has begun.
We'll see. And so far, so good.
Nice, yeah. What did you do before Bicycle Times?
Before Bicycle Times, I had a career in the lovely newspaper industry, which is just blowing up these days.
That's right. No, yeah. People are buying them right and left. So much so that they say maybe online is not the way to get your news.
Yeah, they deliver this pile of like really crumbly paper to your door every morning.
And it's super
like,
useful.
Ink all over your hands. I was a journalism major in college, and I worked in newspapers for a long time doing all sorts of stuff. And at one point, you know, I'd been really into cycling, and at one point I sort of got lucky and got a job doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's fun because I would imagine like you kind of get to, as the editor, is this general editor? Was that part of your title? Or?
Yeah, I'm the editor-in-chief.
Okay.
I don't like that term.
That's better, I think, than general editor.
I mean, we have a really small staff, right? So everybody does a little bit of everything.
Right. I actually just subscribed. I wasn't going to tell you that when you first handed me the magazine, but I do have a copy of the one that you handed to us. It's a great publication.
Thank you.
And I remember a friend of mine passed one along to me some years ago, and I remember looking at it and thinking, you know, this is not like Cycling Magazine, for example. That's the one where like every issue is basically about someone trying to be Lance Armstrong.
Get fit fast.
Yeah. And like how to increase your power meter and everything. And it's not like there's nothing wrong with that, but it's kind of a very niche interest in a way. Like, so I guess it's the mainstream image of cycling in America.
It is.
But like if you want to do something besides that, that's not necessarily your first go-to. And Bicycle Times does a great job of covering all of these things that like normal people, for lack of a better term, are interested in. So like if you like to wear jeans and ride a bike, or if you like to go bicycle touring, or if you're a fan. So Dirt Rag is there for mountain biking interests and that sort of thing too.
Yeah.
But just kind of like a more generalized, like this is what people do when they ride bikes.
Yeah, I mean, Dirt Rag covers sort of that mountain bike end, and then there are some various other sort of road racing magazines at the other end. And we like to think we cover all the stuff in between.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we do road riding, we wear spandex, but we also are not afraid to talk about mountain bikes. We try to cover the whole gamut without being polarizing in any way.
Right. And you have to do that while still keeping it interesting, right? Because it'd be easy to be like, there's this thing, it does this thing.
Yeah,
it's fun.
It's hard to, it's a fine line. I mean, we want to appeal to a broad audience, but we don't want to dissuade anybody from being a potential reader. So
sure.
The idea is hopefully So anybody who's even remotely interested in cycling can pick it up and find something that they like.
Yeah. And it's very possible.
I hope so.
Yeah. No, I do like that kind of that middle ground sort of thing. It's very versatile.
Well, and it reflects the kind of cycling that I do and a lot of my friends do. And you know, we dabble in this and that and mm-hmm. we try to mix it up. But yeah, a lot of time we just like ride to work or ride to the store or go on some weird adventure ride or go touring. So we're not, I don't like to put people in categories.
Right. And people don't like to be put in categories generally, unless they're really good at their category.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for the rest of us who are just like, we don't think about how good we are in our category. that's a good way to treat us.
That's exactly how I think about touring.
Right. Right.
We're the gold medal of touring.
Right. 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 I am the best cycle tourist ever.
I've won this category.
What is writing about bikes like? As far as, because you've done journalism in other respects, you've written about many things, I'm sure, in your lifetime. What specifically writing about bikes? How do you approach that?
It's a little different. One of the hardest things is sort of juggling what is work and what is not work, and so part of my life is sort of balancing that. But the great thing is that, you know, having this outlet to reach out to people, whether it's you guys or so many other people that I've interviewed over the years or have just had a chance to ride bikes with or so forth. So, it really opens a lot of doors.
Right. So in a good way, it's like, this doesn't even feel like work.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Gotcha. As opposed to like, you're not trying to figure out like, well, how do I avoid work today or something?
Yeah, it's still a job. I mean, obviously it's a very, very fun job and it's a dream job, but it's still work and still annoying and I still get super stressed out about it.
Sure. Sure.
So there's that, but I don't really know what else I would do. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. Well, that means you've kind of found your spot, I think.
I hope so.
Yeah. What is it? You mentioned that you do a wide variety of things. Well, what do you do on bikes?
You know, I ride a lot around town, like a normal sort of commuter type person. If it's a nice sunny day, I'll more often than not go mountain biking. But I also am really into just sort of anywhere where you can get off the beaten path and explore. Mm-hmm. So I like road riding, but in a sense of exploration. I love riding into some little town I've never been to and like hanging out in front of the corner store or just checking out what's over that next hill.
That's one of my favorite ways to explore the countryside.
Yeah.
Because like you meet a lot of interesting people in front of corner stores.
And I've seen so many parts of Oregon that otherwise you would never end up in.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy that aspect. I don't like playing with cars. And I'm certainly not a competitive person, so I never got really into like racing or anything.
Yeah. So playing with cars, you mean like fighting for space on the road or something?
I get freaked out more when I'm outside the city, like around town when I feel like the traffic's moving a little slower and there's options to get out of the way, it's a little easier. But man, anytime I'm like out riding Skyline or something, it just really bothers me.
On the way to Malala, it's like no,
I would
no
much
place
rather,
to go.
Yeah, and I am really into mountain biking and I will gladly take crazy risks mountain biking that seem petty compared to riding on Skyline.
Right. Well, and it's risks that don't involve like the negligence of another human.
Exactly.
Being
it's my fault. It's my responsibility.
You've got a large amount of control, exactly. Like going down a single track or.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you mentioned that there's not a lot of great mountain biking access close to Portland. What are your favorite spots around this area?
I ride Sandy Ridge a lot, I think like most people do.
Heard good things about that. The parking lot, whenever I have been past there, is super full.
It's a wonderful asset, and despite the fact that it's a little far away, it's like a real model of what can be done with partnership with BLM and the land managers and sort of like a really good plan. I mean, it's trails that are designed specifically for mountain biking. It's accessible for all skill levels. So it's a good example of like, this is a great opportunity for recreation. that whether you look at like a business model, like a ski resort or so forth, like it's like that kind of model.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've heard great things about the course there. What do you think about Stubbs Stewart State Park? Because I know it has a mountain biking aspect to it.
Yeah, they've done a lot of work in the last year or two, and I know that there's plans for more.
Mm-hmm.
I've been volunteering with the Northwest Trail Alliance lately, and they have a big vision for Stubbs Stewart. And being a state park, I think they have a little bit more leeway in use of the terrain and the sense of that it's not designated wilderness or anything,
right.
So that they can build a recreation platform. It's a recreation area,
right? Because the Bureau of Land Management is dealing with land sometimes in some certain cases where
BLM just does I don't even know what, but
well, they have to make sure there's enough animals for people to kill later on in the season. But there's also a lot of things where, like, you know, they have to balance that sort of like conservation versus recreation. Whereas the state parks,
state park is a recreation.
They got to talk up conservation, otherwise people are going to tear the place apart. But there's also like it's very clear, like, we came in here and terraformed this place into a place where people could camp.
I mean, there's a disc golf course.
Yeah. That place is pretty great. I'm a fan.
It's lovely. Yeah. It's also shame it's a little far, but.
Right.
What can you do?
Yeah.
I guess it wouldn't be all that easy to, like, get on your mountain bike and bike to.
Stubbs Stewart is possible. You take the Max out to Forest Grove, but it's. You add in, I don't know, maybe like 2 hours. From Forest Grove to the park, and then another 2 hours at the end. So, I mean, you're looking at like a whole day thing.
Yeah, each way. Yeah, it's not the sort of like you have to have the time to make that
and
work.
In a lot of places, it would be really great to like, oh, I'm just going to go rip around for an hour after work mountain biking, but that's just not possible here.
Yeah. So, if that's not the case, then there are other options for fun riding in the city.
Yes. I really love this sort of, I don't even know what you call it. Like, my friends and I and coworkers at Bicycle Times, I mean, we do these sorts of rides where there's no real point. I mean, we sort of wear normal clothes or just like baggy, bikey clothes, and we ride around town, and maybe we'll go up Leif Erikson through Forest Park, or maybe we'll go up Tabor, or maybe we'll go over there and here and there, and then we'll stop and get a beer, and then we'll ride around. And it's not a parade by any stretch, but it's not... It's just sort of a free-form thing. And so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you can. It's kind of Portland has been kind of cartoonishly described as a playground, but it really is a playground. Like, there's a lot of fun things to do in this town, and you're never too far from caffeine or alcohol.
Yes, so that's for sure.
Both of those things, if you like them, are there at your disposal. Yeah, and then getting from one place to another, like if you are doing a pub crawl or something, it can be a pub crawl in which you burn off the liquor from the last stop. Before you get to the next one.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a thing where it's like a cruise or a parade, but, you know, we'll sort of just ride with for no real sense or purpose. So, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I kind of missed that. At least with my job in particular, like, I haven't had as much time to ride around the city. Like, when I have I took a sick day about a week ago. And so I was rolling around town like in the middle of the day when the sun was out and like it wasn't raining, and it was like this really magical place. I was like, oh yeah, this is the Portland I remember. This is like why I moved here.
What a coincidence! You were sick on a beautiful sunny day.
I know, right? Well, the thing is, I actually was sick, but I had to go back into work in the afternoon because, details. But I was sick.
Because you're still dedicated.
Don't you accuse me?
You're still dedicated to your job. You still on a sick day.
I played through the pain. Yeah, no, but this is like that. Well, one of my favorite things is like, you know, going to a coffee shop and sitting there for like an hour and a half and reading the news or reading Bicycle Times, for example, cruising, you know, to the next destination. Like, oh, I think I'm going to go get a sandwich from the grocery store or something. And
And we do it outside of town as well. I mean, I've been to so many weird places where you're just like, well, let's go ride a bike there and check it out. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I'm curious, it's something that came to mind for me when I was thinking about interviewing you as a person who does writing for the magazine, is you do reviews of products.
Yes.
So what is it like to work with a product? I would assume you get some swag that you get to like hang on to and work.
Do you want
with.
Some free t-shirts? Because let me tell you, I have a lot of t-shirts that I can happily give away.
What are they a cotton poly blend?
Yeah, no, I mean they're like Hanes t-shirts, and they're usually like, oh, you look like an extra large.
Right, 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 right. Yeah, yeah.
You could make like a I'm quilt not gonna, or blanket.
Yeah,
out of
I well. So there's this company. Rope. There's this company that called Problem Solvers, and their T-shirt on the front had their logo or something, and then on the back it said "Future Shop Rag," because they know exactly what's going to happen.
That's good marketing, right there.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I mean, yes, I get to play with a lot of really cool products, but we sort of feel like having your hands on a lot of stuff. And being sort of cynical and jaded about it actually makes the product reviews better.
Hmm.
Because, you know, when I first started, and I think a lot of people, like, you get the new widget and you're really excited about it. And you're like, oh, my gosh, this is cool. This is, like, the new cool thing.
Right. I never thought I'd have one of these.
Right. But now I get to play with lots of cool stuff. And I'm sort of like, oh, yeah, no, this is the new 18-speed version of the whatever.
Right. Oh, this again.
Thingamajigger. Yeah. And I don't have that sort of like starstruck feeling about it.
Sure.
And so I feel like we can look at things with a little bit more of an open mind in that regard.
Gives you're some objectivity.
Yeah, you're able to be objective. Like have a little bit of skepticism.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, the companies will send us some bike or whatever, and then we try it, and then we give it back. And even if you purchase the product, you have a sort of bias in the sense that you have made the decision that this product is worth whatever value that you have assigned to it. And so you inherently are going to like it. I mean, I've never read a product review of somebody who's like, I paid my hard-earned money for this thing and I just can't stand it. So,
right.
Yeah, it's a fine line that we try to walk.
Right, yeah. Because I was thinking it's got to be like at some point it's got to be tempting to court all these different options and be like, I'm going to try every type of cycling jeans that there are.
But I mean, I'm at the point, and a lot of us, I think, that work here full time and do this for a living just like don't care anymore. I mean, uh-huh. There's very few bicycle products that I'm like, oh my God, I got to get my hands on them.
Right.
Like if I could have anything, I would much, much, much rather just have some more time to go ride my damn bike.
So you need someone who can sell negative space.
Right. Like if SRAM wants to come out with their new like 13 speed thingamajig, like that's great. And I think it's cool. And I still like learning about it, but it doesn't really affect my behavior
right yeah well that's good. I mean, it seems to me, because I think if I put myself in the same situation, I would probably be like, well, I'm just gonna get one of everything. So
yeah it's, well, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, it's not like we get to pick and choose and
right
like order up stuff. I mean, a lot of it's like a product driven cycle, and the mountain bike side especially is very like product driven. So like companies release product on the sort of schedule every year, and you sort of learn the schedule. And Bicycle Times falls in between that regard. There's like the high end, like road race stuff that mm-hmm. also gets that sort of vibe. But Bicycle Times is more like, yeah, well, now Levi's makes these commuter jeans or,
yeah,
you know, whatever new like helmet or something. So, we don't try not to get caught up in that sort of rat race, but we do try to stay, sort of ahead of the curve in the sense of trends or thinking outside the box. I mean, we try to review products that maybe you've never heard of, weird cargo bikes and like folding bikes and all this stuff. So like anything that has a sort of news value.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Yeah. I'm curious, just as you spent some time looking at bicycling in that in-between space, in between the performance and the woods stuff, just like bicycling as an augmentation to somebody's life, what do you think are the coolest innovations that have happened in recent times? Like, what's made it easier to just be an everyday bicyclist?
There are definitely a few. I mean, I'm really interested in like new technology. So, disc brakes are a no-brainer. I mean, even hydraulic systems is really cool. I've gotten to play with some of the electronic shifting stuff And it's still pretty, those are like high-end products, but they're really neat. And, you know, they're maybe not for everybody, and I certainly don't think they're going to take over every application. But I think it's really fascinating to see innovation coming into cycling that hasn't been there in the last decade or so.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem to be kind of a boom time. It's like the gold rush of
oh, it's definitely new things. And I attribute it to several things like rapid prototyping and 3D printing. And
oh, yeah. People have been talking
AutoCAD,
about 3D printing.
And now you can have, I mean, you look at these bike companies and they'll design a new widget and then bang it out on the 3D printer and then have it up and running the next day. Right. And so they can, the product cycle has become so short that things just come out of left field, like 650B wheels or this whole like plus thing. And just every
and even
year
like
it's
CNC
something
machines
new.
Have
yeah.
gotten a lot more affordable.
Where a decade or so ago, it was like, well, you know, that's like a year lead up time to build a new tire or something.
Right.
And then that, you know, and then they got to put it on a boat and sail the boat over.
Retrofit the factory in order
exactly.
to like, get.
It reminds me a lot of that like early 90s mountain bike boom where things just went bonkers and people were just throwing things at the wall to see
right.
what would stick. So
right.
I think, yeah, a lot of the technology right now is people throwing things at the wall.
But it's cheaper
because
to do that
it's
than ever
possible.
Before.
And
there's,
yeah.
there's this interesting nexus of technology. Innovation, I mean, technology and innovation often go hand in hand, but there's technology and innovation, and then this boom in popularity of cycling and cycling both for sport and just mm-hmm. general mm-hmm. stuff. So you have these like really high end things, and immediately people, like just regular Joes, are wanting to grab that and be like, you know, how does, for example, electronic shifting, how does mm-hmm. that impact me as a commuter or whatever? Generally it doesn't, but there's people who like see that and get really attracted, and
yeah.
so that brings it to the
but well, you could be a pro commuter.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I like to make the analogy that I like race cars, but I would certainly never drive one.
Right.
But that technology
but that technology
trickles down and it
well,
influences
and that's
the
cost
products
prohibitive.
That we use.
Like if you like race cars or whatever, you know, in order to buy a race car, you know, it's a bit cost prohibitive, whereas, like, I like really high-end bike stuff. But in order to buy, like, this high-end bike stuff, it's a little bit more accessible than, like, say, like a high-end car.
Oh, well, I will say that, yeah, even the really high-end cycling world is a bargain
yeah.
compared to a lot of other hobbies.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Photography, race cars, motorcycles. All of it.
Stamp collecting.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of other ways to spend insane amounts of money. So.
Yeah. Did you have a stamp collection as a kid?
I did not.
Okay. That's probably good. It blew me away that like a little piece of paper, if it's rare enough, can be worth like $1,000. It's ridiculous. You should get yourself a bike instead.
Yeah. Well, then you get into the whole like, what is price and what is value? And that's
right.
sort of like sure. that conundrum. Which is
totally. Yeah. And
that's another episode.
That's true. Well, we got to earmark that and come back to it. You got to come back and price versus
why
value.
Why is no one buying my bike?
Right. Why is no one renting my house?
Yeah.
Or something like
there
that.
There you go. Price versus value.
Right, right. So in dealing with product and things, is there an example of something that's like the least useful thing you could imagine? I'm assuming it's
Ooh.
Something that didn't come to print.
There's a lot of really oddball products that people send our way or send us the press release for that I'm the kind of person who will try anything. And so when we get a lot of oddball products, I'm the first person. It's like, yeah, I want to try that.
Mm, yeah.
But there are, some, I mean, there's like Garmin has this like heads up display, sort of sunglasses widget now.
So like. Second tier Google Glass.
Exactly.
Your
but
GPS
it mounts,
or...
it'll mount on any pair of sunglasses and it like shoots your speed and heart rate and all this stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And they have like a rear view facing radar and these things. And I
tell how fast
like, you need to have a computer engineering program or degree to just get the thing running.
So. Yeah. So not like super techie, but not super useful.
Well, a lot of examples are things that are possible because of new technologies, whether it's, you know, GPS or so on. And but that doesn't mean that anyone wants it.
We can do this. We should do this.
And there's a lot of stuff where people are like, well, we can put this Bluetooth speaker in the thing. And I'm like, well, I don't think the world needs that.
The Bluetooth speaker in your, like, makeup blanket or something.
Yeah, the Bluetooth speaker is the new, like, digital clock radio.
Oh, sure.
Where they just come
it's
out
a clock
of
on everything.
They just come out of woodwork, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When, you know, now everything is a Bluetooth speaker. So the shoes have a built-in Bluetooth speaker.
Wait, really? Yours?
I wish. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, totally. It'd be like the new Air Jordan or something. Instead of pumping up your shoes,
yes,
your shoes would pump you up.
They would just play music, get you stoked.
Yeah. What is something that you're looking forward to? What's an era of innovation, either in product or just in like the way people look at bikes that you're still kind of looking towards?
Well, the way people look at bikes that is really rewarding now is that people seem to be breaking down the barriers between categories.
Oh yeah.
And that people are interested in using bikes for more than just fitness or mountain bike. I mean, there's how many bikes that are just like, we don't even know what categories are anymore. There's
like gravel bikes?
Exactly. And they blend together in a sort of way where you're like, well, is that a bike packing bike? Like, what does that even mean?
This is something that I was thinking about when I was looking into building my own wheels was, you know, looking at certain manufacturers like online catalogs, they have them split up between like, you know, you got your road rims and your mountain bike rims and whatever. And I was like, well, is that even relevant anymore? Like I want 26 inch rims, but I'm generally going to be on the road. And yet, you know, 26 is generally a mountain bike thing, but yeah, like why aren't we just like going by size?
I think the wheel, the entire manufacturers have the best and worst of that because they're just like, there's just like numbers coming out of the woodwork now.
Right.
And yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it used to be like you could go to the tire company's website.
I want a BMX tire.
Mountain road. And then now it's like, well, I'm sort of in this like weird in between. And so it used to be, now it's just all gray area to me.
Yeah.
So
like half gravel, half mud tires.
Hash, like, you know, is this a gravel bike or is this a bike packing bike? And you're like, what the heck difference does it make? You know, it's a bike that you can do all this stuff on. It's just a bike.
I've made mine do all of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not designed for any of them.
I try not to get too hung up on sort of like, this is for that.
Right. It's like we talked about yesterday with Tim. It's basically like the whole you're doing it wrong thing. Like the only way you're doing it wrong is if you don't like the way it works.
Yeah.
You don't like the way it feels.
If you're not having fun.
Pain?
Right.
If you're not having fun.
Yeah.
I mean, if your idea of fun is downhill mountain biking on a Brompton.
Yeah.
More power to
you.
That sounds amazing.
But
I'm going over to Clever Cycles tomorrow.
Seriously. I'm going to get myself
go rent me a Brompton.
Some internally geared hubs, some drum brakes, some 20-inch wheels.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah. I can't explain it. It just kind of fell apart. Yeah.
They're not 20-inch. They're like 16-something.
Oh, are they 16s?
Yeah,
okay.
It's a weird size. Yeah. Only Brompton wheels are that size.
Yeah, some other folding bikes are 16,
they?
Yeah.
And children's bicycles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a wide gap in the style of tires available for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe not any gravel tires, though. Adam,
is this a gravel-specific tire?
I don't know. It's a tire.
I was harassing the Brompton rep. It was like during Film by Bike last year.
Yeah. Like,
so when is Brompton going to come out with a fat bike, Brompton?
What did he say?
He's like, that kind of defeats the purpose.
Is there a Brompton tandem? I think that should happen.
I think I've seen it, but I think it's like somebody like
some
after marketing. Like
custom
thing. Yeah, their two Bromptons or whatever.
A folding fat bike would be,
that would be
really
like,
next level.
I mean,
well,
you know,
honestly,
it's just going to be like, you know, this wide. Certainly you couldn't fit it into an airline overhead, but.
Well, and the biggest problem with the fat bike thing is that I don't know, but I'm guessing a lot of those rims for fat bikes aren't going to be very easily put onto a bus rack. So if you're trying to use public transit to get to Sandy Ridge or something.
I have seen a Pugsley on a bus rack.
Okay. At the very least, you have
my
to
mind.
Yeah, you have to deflate the tires because the tires are too wide.
Yeah, that's precarious. Yeah.
So yeah, so if there was a way to like fold something up, that would be cool.
Yeah,
S&S couplers at the very
folding
least.
Folding wheels.
Yeah, there we go. Precisely. Adam, do you have
I
any?
I guarantee you some design student has created that somewhere, yeah.
We're going to keep our eyes out for that. Yeah. Do you have adventures coming up? Anything that you're looking forward to?
I have some ideas this year. I don't have the time, unfortunately, to go on these like big, like 2 week long adventures. But I have a lot of sort of long weekends that I've planned, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, it'll be fun and I'll go do it. And it's not, I try not to put too much pressure on myself, and especially in regards to, people get all caught up in the sort of like, well, you got to do this route or you got to do that route.
You got to cross the
country. You got to do the, yeah, this or that. And I'm like, I don't know. I just go ride my bike in the woods for a couple of days and it's fun and camp out and shoot a BB gun. And,
right, right.
Yeah.
Do you carry the BB gun on by your bike?
I have, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I didn't know how fun BB guns were until I started shooting a lot of cans with it.
Step one, drink something out of a can.
I mean, you can buy a BB gun at Fred Meyer, which kind of blows my mind.
Right.
But I guess it's a toy? I mean,
right.
It seems like, I don't know.
It's the most innocuous kind of gun.
But it looks enough like a gun that it freaks people out.
Sure.
I would imagine so.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you keep it in a pannier on the bike? Or do you like...
I think the cool way is to like strap it across your handlebars.
Oh, okay.
Like,
sure.
Like the version of the bike version of the gun rack in
right.
your pickup
right.
truck.
Going out hunting.
Yeah.
Right.
There is that company that Cogburn that makes special racks
that's right.
for hunting. Mm-hmm. And that's a story
they have like fat bikes specifically.
Yes.
Yeah,
and they're camo and, yeah. and that's a story I want to do for Bicycle Times eventually is hunting by bike.
Yeah.
I have yet to meet a person who actually does that doesn't already have connections in the bike industry.
I've seen some videos of people hunting by bike, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Someone somewhere does it.
Yeah.
I think bird hunting is probably ideal, and they push it for fishing as well. Obviously, it would be awesome to ride up the Deschutes Trail and go fishing for a day or two
it would.
And ride back, right?
With a gun.
Technically, you don't need a special bike for that. Yes, fishing with a gun.
Here's a barrel. Here's some fish. Yeah.
But
you remember back in the day when you could fish with dynamite?
Those are good days.
I learned that from Crocodile Dundee.
That's not a stick of dynamite. This is a stick of dynamite.
That's not a fish.
Yeah. Well, that sounds, that's the sort of thing that is a lot of fun. Like if you get yourself out there in the woods, you do your thing. I enjoy those kinds of weekends. And we're just coming up on the times when that'll be more doable than less with precipitation and all.
Yeah, yeah.
Less rain.
Less rain is easier. I will take rain over like 95 degrees. And like,
yeah.
I grew up in the Midwest and I can't deal with that.
Yeah, so yeah, it's true.
I'd rather go play in the snow than melt.
Sure, yeah. A little more cold.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me. I think the trick is finding the day that like you're not going to get completely drenched. Like you can take a little bit of a sprinkle, a little bit of a shower.
Yeah,
it's kind of chilly at night, but it's not like my last bike trip where it was just like raining all night.
Yeah,
tarp city
the whole time.
Yeah, no fire.
You had like these great aspirations.
We had great aspirations.
Yes.
That's gonna be the name of my bicycle touring company someday.
Great aspirations.
Yeah. Well, Adam, how can people get in touch with Bicycle Times? How can they get with the times and have their own subscription?
Well, it would be excellent if everyone could check it out. It's available on newsstands at Barnes & Noble and sometimes Whole Foods. You'll find it around. Go to bicycletimesmag.com. You can order a subscription. That's what keeps us in business.
Yeah,
so.
It's what, $16 for a year?
Yeah, we do 6 issues a year, sort of centered around the summer months. It's $16 or $17, and everyone likes getting mail, so why not get a really cool bike magazine in the mail?
Something that, it's not quite glossy, right? It's more of a matte finish.
It's just right.
Yeah, yeah. It's the perfect balance.
Like a satin finish.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. It's made in America and printed in America.
There you go. It's a domestic product.
By Americans.
100%
for
everyone.
100% made in America. Yeah. Check us out online or in print.
Fabulous. Yeah, I think every wait. Say that one more time. I just realized this is a perfect opportunity.
This is a good call to action here.
All right, go to bicycletimesmag.com. Check us out.
You schmucks. I feel like our calls to action always have to be some like angry or full of some sort of invective.
I was wondering what that sound effect was, sort of the history of it.
Yeah, I just wanted something that was motivating.
Okay.
The next thing we need is like some sort of like patriotic sounding music, like some old brass band thing that we could put.
Do you remember back?
Well, or like next time one of us has an extended rant.
Yeah.
You could just have like you
go from the drums to like no.
Exactly. I remember a time when you could ride your bicycle to school and no one cared. So yeah, at some point I'm going to find that, but it has to be like some patriotic anthem from a country that we don't know. Like no one should be able to pick it out of a lineup or anything.
Or a country that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh yeah. Ooh, like, perfect. Perfect.
Some ex-Soviet bloc.
Yeah. From an old
country.
Wax cylinder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Precisely.
All right.
Thank you for thank you for coming in.
Yeah. Thanks
best wishes.
So much for having me. I feel like I've arrived in a sense of being part of the Portland bike community. You're not officially there unless you've been on the show. So.
Oh, wow.
Holy
That's
really?
High praise. I would not have expected that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought we caught people on the decline. Whoa.
I was going to say we feel like you've arrived because you're here. So... Yeah.
No, I've been in Portland for 2 years now, and
everyone's
been extremely welcoming, and I've made a lot of really great friends, and it's just so nice to see so many diverse aspects of cycling culture that are capable of supporting their own scene. In a lot of places, if you're even tangentially exposed to cycling, you know everybody in town. And here, there are so many different pockets and niches to get into. So it's really fun.
Cycling has become pervasive, which is a good thing about this town. Yeah. Also, you don't have to wear a necktie to too many places.
I don't even know if I own a necktie.
I could lend you mine. I never use it.
I hope so, yeah.
Do you have... we do a theme for our closing credits every week.
Ooh.
Do you have a theme you'd like us to affect for either a general disposition or certain characters we might take on?
When you mentioned it a moment ago, the vision that came to my head was play 'em off, keyboard cat, if you have some cat memes queued up.
Oh, we could probably find some. Cat memes.
I'm not entirely
like
sure
the song that is composed of meows.
Oh, yes. There are most Christmas carols are available in meow form.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
No, just search play 'em off keyboard cat and you'll find it.
Oh, there it is.
I had the honor of attending the Internet Cat Video Film Festival when it was here in town.
Really?
Yeah.
Charlie Schmidt's keyboard cat.
That's keyboard cat.
So, how long is our usual outro music? I was trying to remember.
It's like 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay, so I'll have to play this twice.
At least.
All right, you got me potted up there?
Yep.
So this is kind of like the, was it Super Troopers, where we have to like slip in meow as well?
No.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme meow.
Herb Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
Thanks to sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Johnny K.
Is it okay to do this? Katharina Mialumgard?
Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson.
Ethan Georgie, Justin Meowton.
Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean, Richard Wazinski, Tim Meowney.
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Meow Kelly.
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Meowler.
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Meowgan.
Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, Andy Brunner.
Dave Knows, Memes, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster.
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar Miat.
Patrick Archain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole.
Miarcolo, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson.
Drew the Meower, Andra, Anna, Chris Skukas.
John Wasser Meow, Andre Johnson, Shelley and Troy.
King of Meow, Josh Zissen, Richard G.
And Guthrie Meow.
And that brings us to the end. Now, clean out your litter box.
Guys, that was perfect.